Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. If this is your first time streaming or downloading the program, Guelph Politicast is an interview show where I talk to politicians, activists, and people of note making a difference or just making life in the Royal City more interesting. For previous episodes of the Guelph Politicast, you can find them on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or you can subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Today I talk to some people about move-out madness. Sadly, or fortunately, depending on your point of view, it's the end of the school year at the University of Guelph, and that means it's time for the organized chaos of moving out. Now, as we bid adieu to the students, be it for a semester or forever, the stuff from many student residences remain, and sometimes that makes problems for other Guelph citizens and landlords. Packing up and dropping off is the topic of this week's Guelph Politicast. Now, we hear a lot about university students as they're moving in, and we hear a lot about university students when they act out of turn, like what happened with last fall's homecoming celebrations, but it's not such a big deal when the students go. It's like we get to the end of April and it gently occurs to us that the city's a little lighter than it used to be, that things aren't as busy as they once were, you can get a cab downtown much easier on a Saturday night. It seems like such a big deal when the students arrive, so why don't we care as much when they leave again? Actually, there is one area that does notice that the students are gone: waste collection. In student-friendly neighborhoods, the sheer amount of stuff put out to the curb at the end of April can be overwhelming, and if you see some of the dumpsters, overwhelming is a word that doesn't quite do the mess justice. Well, you can drop off clothes and household items to one of the town's numerous second-hand shops, and unopened food items to one of Guelph's food banks, so much just ends up in big black garbage bags in a dumpster. Can we do better? And if we do want to do better, what are the challenges? To discuss this and other aspects of move-out madness, we have three guests this week. First, I welcome back Catherine Hoffer and her colleague Matthew Geisbers from the Student Life Office at the University of Guelph to talk about the logistics and pitfalls of getting students unsettled at the end of the year. And then I talk to Caleb Jason, the director of the new documentary Diverted, a story about modern-day treasure hunting and second chances. So this week on the podcast, we talk about these lives and garbage bags left behind, and how might we better reclimate them in the future? What would it take to get various city agencies together and manage this better? Can we have a move-out day in the same vein as we have a move-in day? How can we make students more aware of the services they can take advantage of, as opposed to throwing things out? After Hoffer and Geisbers answer those questions, we'll dumpster dive with a new local film about dumpster diving called Diverted, with its director, Caleb Jason. But first, we start off with student life. For those of us who have never had to move out madly, what is move out madness, and what's involved?
Okay, so Move Out Madness is a program with the university, and what we do is we allow students to kind of like donate furniture that they no longer want, whether the furniture's kind of reached the end of its life or it's just something they genuinely don't need or want anymore. And so what we do is we'll pick it up and then we keep it in a storage facility, or we'll take it to the dump or have the city come and get it, depending on the condition it's in. And then students in the fall are able to come in and take a look at all the furniture that we have collected, and then we'll actually deliver it to their houses for them.
Okay. Is it just furniture?
Furniture is like for the most part what we do, although we have like things like the free store, and we also pair up with like the food bank on donating things like food coming from residents and some more of like household like appliances, like plates, dishes, things like that. So okay. Yeah, it's pretty all encompassing.
Okay. Because I think one of the interesting questions for me is, we have a move-in day. Yeah. Why isn't there a move-out day? I mean, I imagine, like, I understand there's logistics, and not everybody ends classes on the same time. It's maybe a bit more different, but I think when we're talking about the issues of the waste that's generated, and you know, people trying to all move out, at, you know, being mobile at the same time, I wonder, just from a logical standpoint, yeah. Move-out madness, like a move-out day.
I think a move-out day would be overwhelming. Because move-in day, I think a move-in day is specifically for residents on campus. And our students moving into residence, they're coming with their their personal needs. I mean, there's more to it than your basic needs, but they've got all their personal stuff and they accumulate a lot over the year. And then I think of our off-campus students, they move in over a week usually or so in September, and they often have lived in a place for more than a year. So just like anyone in the community, when you move, if you move houses or apartments, you've got more stuff than you ever realized. And then you move and there's always those boxes of things you don't open right away. And I think students are the same way. And when they really have to clear out, they think, well, a lot of this stuff I don't need to take with me. So what do I do with it?
Is there a messaging issue then? Or, you know, picking up on Caleb's film, Divergent, it just seems like maybe it's, there is a messaging thing, or it's just a timing thing, or, you know, in terms of your experience helping to manage this Leviathan.
Yeah, like it can kind of be tricky in terms of the timing, because like you live in a house with, let's say, five people, mm-hmm. and everyone will finish exams on like a different day, and then a lot of people end up going home. So within that, it's hard to have that really kind of like centered, unified position on like when people are going to be able to get rid of furniture and stuff like that. So I think that leads to a lot of the waste too. And I mean, like the nice thing is most leases end on like April 30th, May 1st. So like there is that kind of like a lot more pickup around those days for us. But it's just tricky because everyone is kind of doing their own thing. So it's hard for that unified completion from all the houses and stuff.
Mm-hmm. And I think of Kayla's film, and a lot of the things that he shows that he picked up from dumpsters, it's not just your large furniture, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of plates, there's sheets, there's clothing.
Yeah.
And I think despite all the messaging that happens in April geared to students around reuse, I think a lot of people don't realize how much they have until they actually go to move out.
Mm.
And then it's what resource do you have immediately? So, for example, we work with Habitat for Humanity on the large item pickup. They take the really good quality stuff to their restore. But they like to have that booked in advance. So if you were a community member calling Habitat, they would schedule you for a certain pickup day. And a student saying, okay, I just finished three exams this week. I'm done. I'm ready to move. Oh, wait, I have all of this stuff. And if I call someone, they can't pick it up today. I don't have transportation to get it somewhere.
Right.
So there's some barriers there as well in terms of the individual and in forethought. And then also what resources do I have to be able to get things to different places?
We're all on different wavelengths is what it sounds like. And one of the things that struck me is that, you know, when you look at the broader Guelph community, we kind of all have part of the answer. You know, you have the food bank for unopened food. You have composting for open food. You have Restore, Goodwill, Habitat for Humanity, Value Village. It's kind of all here to make sure that the dumpsters don't get filled up with stuff that can be used. But it does seem like, as you said, you know, Habitat for Humanity is on a different schedule than the students, and as I think a lot of students are like, well, this, I have to get this done because I have to go start my summer job in a week, or you know, or I'm in the middle of exam, so I'm not thinking of calling ahead to book this for next week. So, is there something you think that keeping in mind those wavelengths, is there something that we're not doing? That, you know, there's something, you know, to not make this as wasteful or to make it more efficient, or, you know, does that vex you guys?
I have my personal opinions on this. I know, and Matt will, he'll share in this, but we know from Move Out Madness that a lot of the furniture that gets donated, that students are putting out, is not high quality. It's consumable furniture. So there are certain stores, furniture shops that put out furniture like desks, and it gets out to the curb, and you could just blow on it, and the whole thing will tip over.
Right.
And it worked well when they were a student, and it was probably a reasonable price, and it was packaged nicely to get to their house. But once it's put together, it's not really something you can move. So I think we do live in a bit in a consumable culture. We're not. I think of my grandparents and the furniture they have, and it's solid, and it's been around for decades, and it has a lasting power to it. So I think there's a commercial consumerist quality there. That's my personal take on that experience.
Sure, yeah. People are not necessarily IKEA inclined in terms of the work in the Allen wrench, and some students may not care because, like, I just need this to stand up straight for 8 months, and then you know what happens. Sorry, did you have something to?
I was just gonna agree with that. Like, a big problem is like a lot of the students, their furniture is already secondary or tertiary or who knows how many houses it's been in already. Yeah, yeah. So like. Often it's kind of nearing the end of its life. And also, I mean, this program is done in the spring, which is also tricky because, like, a lot of the days where we're doing pickups, it's raining. And, like, we do ask them to, like, see if they can put, like, tarps or plastic around the furniture to kind of keep the rain out. But at the same time, you know, a lot of stuff gets a little wet, and then it's a little harder to be like, hey, yeah, we have a now moldy-ish couch. Which is, it's tricky.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Is this also something, and I kind of wonder about this, do you think the town takes advantage that, you know, it's not all a student thing? Sometimes it's not all students that, you know, people are like, oh, it's April, I can just throw stuff out in the dumpster and it's going to get the blame on students.
I think it's interesting because we have had years with Move Out Madness where we've gotten some bad press and we've had some instances where furniture piles up somewhere. We really have tried to structure the program so that students, they register, they agree to a whole bunch of terms of when your furniture goes out. If it's not collected that day, when do you bring it back up? Just like the city waste system, how it's labeled, because we want to ensure that people are following the program. And if someone's walking down the street and they see five pieces of furniture at the end of the driveway, they see that it's labeled Move Out Madness.
Right.
We work with the city so that if they're out and they see items at a curb and it's not labeled Move Out Madness, and we share the addresses that we're collecting at each day, they know the address isn't for collection. They'll actually go up and knock on the door and hand the students, if it's students living there, a flyer to let them know to register. But I think, yes, there's a bit of a factor of, okay, three houses on the street have furniture out, I'm going to add mine to it. So we do work. Sometimes we do occasionally have to deal with that odd address that maybe isn't a student house and they put furniture out. And we try to work with that and see if stuff is donatable and get that collected too if we can.
Mm. Is it possible that we could have a Move Out Madness, even if it's not, you know, that you, to use that phrase, but, you know, just this annual process, is it possible we can get to, like, a point of, like, almost no waste or zero waste that, you know, if we all just kind of work a bit harder to raise awareness and educate the students and our local agencies, like, in order to communicate better, can we not see these pile? I mean, I realize we'd be robbing, you know, a lot of our treasure hunters who look forward to this time of year, the chance of, you know, fishing nuggets out of the dumpsters. But the waste is remarkable, and it's almost unsettling in a way to look at the sheer, you know, what gets pulled out and what gets thrown out. It's really quite something.
I think we can get better for sure. I mean, the idea of no waste, I think that's like an ideal that I'm not sure if that's in any way realistic. But I absolutely think, like, it comes down to raising awareness about some of the programs and the stuff that's around campus, like Move Out Madness, like Food Bank and all these other programs that are happy to kind of help out with reducing waste. But then at the same time, though, there's just some things that aren't realistic and
fair enough.
Yeah.
And a capacity issue with a lot of people moving out in a shorter period of time. We have lots of agencies, and I think lots of people in the community would say, I'd love to take that. I don't have the means to take it now. Or when you think of something like a place like the Salvation Army and the thrift stores, and that they each have so much capacity. And when they reach that capacity, they don't have a place to store. And that's a limitation that we have too. We have storage containers that we store our furniture in over the summer months, and we hit a capacity near the end of the program.
The Salvation Army, and they only have so much space for 365 days a year. Okay, well, having said all that, what's the best advice for students looking to offload some things and not offload them into a dumpster, but, you know, in terms of taking advantage of what there is and what they can do? What's the best advice?
I would say, like, try and, like, check out the resources the university has available, because, like, things like Move Out Madness are there. And I'm going to be honest, I wasn't aware of Move Out Madness until I saw the job posting for it. And so, like, it can be a bit of a maze to try and find all the different resources that the university has. But if if you know, you reach out and you really look for it, there's a lot of stuff available that I think can really help you as a like an individual student reduce your waste.
Okay.
I also think the mindset of if you were going to throw it out anyways, why not just post it for free somewhere? So you don't have to put a price on something on Kijiji. On the Canon website that universities use, you don't have to post a price. You could just list free. And there's a lot of people who would be quick to jump on an item that's listed as free. So it doesn't if you were going to donate it, if you had the time to organize that, why not just post something for free and see if someone will get it?
Right. I mean, it's almost the same amount of effort to put something on there for on the line and say this is free, and as well as lugging it down the lane into a dumpster. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks, guys.
Right. Thank you, Adam.
So, Caleb, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but you seem like you are an experienced picker, as it were. You know, you in terms of where we started the movie, this is something you've done before. The you know, trying to reclaim that which has been thrown out, is that a fair assumption of where you come from in terms of how this film began?
Yeah, those weren't my first dumpsters that I've been in.
So how did you get started?
I think it was about 9 or 10 years ago, actually, when I went by that site for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And then I couldn't believe it. Like, I just like the stuff that I saw laid out on the ground by the bins and in the bins, I couldn't resist.
Were you a student at the time, or
no, not then, no. And so when I saw it again this year, I just. it was actually last year. Sorry,
right, and when you shot it, it was the last year's move out.
Yeah.
So, in terms of filming the experience and turning it into a documentary, and there is a message to it as well. But you know, just in terms of wanting to make a film, why was that such a compelling idea to make a film about that?
It's actually, making a film is something that I've wanted to do for a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's such a powerful medium and a way to get a message across or tell a story and hopefully create change. So when I was there last year and I was just, I was at the bins, and I think the second day that I was there, I had the idea that, you know what, this can actually become something more than just me, you know, picking a few things up. And I just thought, okay, I'm going to make a film.
Mm-hmm.
And then so that night I went online and I found a videographer.
Mm-hmm.
And I convinced him to come out, I think 7 a.m. or 6 a.m. the next morning. And he was really, really, really willing. And so without him and without the footage, we wouldn't really had the film.
Mm-hmm. So this came together pretty quick. You weren't like... This is a story that needs to be told. You were there one day and off you go.
Yeah, the whole thing was done just kind of on the fly, like unscripted.
Mm.
It just it unfolded as the film went along. So I had a rough idea of the type of story that I wanted to tell.
Right.
But because I didn't have the experience and I didn't know, you know, what people were actually going to be involved and what they would say or how it would go, I had no idea how the story would actually unfold. So,
well, you had the knowledge of Guelph, though, and you seem to know, you know, there's the food bank, there's, you know, student life, the sustainability center. You know, you seem to know, if not how to go about it, you seem to know who at least to talk to.
Yeah, I would say for sure. Like, I know my way around the city, and I kind of know where things are. That made it a lot easier. If I had to do this somewhere else, I don't think it would have been as easy.
So... in the beginning of the film, is there's another gentleman there as well who also picks. Is this an unseen culture in our town that, like, you know, this other man, I can't remember his name, but you know, you guys are waiting for April to, you know, find the treasure, I guess.
Yeah, you know what? There's a group of regulars that go there, apparently, not just for the end of the year, but I think all throughout the year.
Mm.
And they're picking stuff. And it's, I don't know, there's like a whole, there's this whole other world that nobody really knows about, this, like the dumpster diving here in Guelph.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's like they all seem to kind of know each other, or they know the sites, they know the spots. Some people just go for food or for certain items. And Yeah, I think there's a whole other movie that could be
there's
made by somebody.
Subculture, yeah.
Subculture, for sure.
And nobody wants to give up the good spots.
Actually, you know, it's kind of like the raccoons, right? The raccoons come out at night and go into the bins. So you go out at night, I'm sure you'll find people that are going into bins.
Mm-hmm. Do you... There's a skill to this, and there was one line in particular where you're like, if you can just like sort of knock on the bag and sort of see if it's one you should open or one you shouldn't open. How does that work? How do you collect these little ins and outs and skills and things? Maybe not with giving away your best secrets, but I just found that line fascinating. You can kind of like sense what bag you shouldn't open.
Yeah, I'm going to be retiring from dumpster diving, so I don't mind sharing some of the secrets.
Passing on the black book, yeah.
I think, you know what, I think you just, I don't know, part of it's like instinct, right? And then you just, I don't know, it's like you look around and you can see... You can see, like, there's certain areas where people throw out really, really nice things any time of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that answers your question or...
No, it is interesting to me that, and I think you say it in the film, that it's like people throw out the kind of like their whole Guelph life that, you know, you got to get out of town fast because you got a summer job. I think that was one of the persons from Student Life you talked to said that you got a summer job waiting at home, or you're trying to move on, or it's the end of the year and you got like 3 days left before between the end of exams and when you have to be out of your apartment when the lease is up or what have you. And so everything just kind of goes in the dumpster, and there's really kind of no thought about where else it could go. And I think that's the interesting part of the film is like there are other avenues than the dumpster. But more than that, it also seems like the dumpster's because the bins you're showing in the film are like the rent-a-bins, and I wonder how many landlords just are like, yeah, screw it, we'll just get a big bin and everyone can toss their life into it, their Guelph life into it. It's remarkable. In terms of the reaction you've gotten so far, there are the young people you talk to in the film who are kind of flabbergasted, but I do wonder how many of them in a year or two might be also putting their stuff in one of those bins. But you know, what's the reaction you get from this, even from the non-students?
I think people are shocked. Actually, that was the other reason I wanted to. Well, there were a bunch of reasons I wanted to make this particular film, but I didn't think people would believe it unless they actually saw it. Like if you just describe, you know, what you're finding, people are like, yeah, okay, no big deal. It's from a dumpster, right?
But right.
Yeah,
but it's a little elbow grease and you know, like not even just the clothes, which you can throw in a washing machine, but you know, stuff that works. Like there was one picture you had where you had like a bunch of toasters on the table and fans and you know all these you know appliances that still work. It's I don't know. It's something else. It certainly surprised me, and I've been around here for a while.
Yeah, I think it surprised a lot of people, but I mean the response has been really, really positive. Like students were shocked. Everybody was shocked. Even the property manager was shocked. So yeah, I think that's a good thing, right? Like when you can do that through a film or through something to it really jolts people, right, to see it.
Right, and I do wonder, and maybe you have some thoughts about why it isn't a bigger story. I mean, we hear a lot about, you know, the move-in day. There's, you know, they shut off roads to move students in. At the beginning of the year, we hear about students throughout the year, particularly with, you know, party culture and all that. But it seems like, and this is one of the reasons I got interested in this through your film, was like, we don't really talk a lot about the final phase when students are moving out, whether that is, you know, they're moving on after graduating or they're just moving away for the summer or what have you, that there's this big mess that gets behind, and it seems to hit all the high points. It's like it's students, it's property, it's townspeople, it's waste, it's all the Guelph kind of hot issues, it seems. This kind of galvanizes it all into one.
Yeah, you're right, totally. I think, there's a big emphasis made on the move-in, during the move-in, like the move-in madness, I guess they call it.
Mm-hmm.
I drove by there this September, actually. I just thought, you know, I wanted to see how they did it, and it was amazing. I kind of watched from the distance. I could see, like, it was like a well-organized, like a small army of people, and they had all kinds of bins, and they had all kinds of volunteers, and everybody was kind of dressed up and
mm-hmm.
pretty amazing. I just thought if it's the same emphasis was put into a move out, mm-hmm. like at this site,
mm.
be a totally different story.
I do wonder about that, and it's kind of addressed by some of the people you talk to, because just the timing's a bit off. There's no kind of singular move-out day. People sort of their exam is done, and that's yeah. kind of their their deadline. It's an interesting. I think it's an interesting proposal. It's like, what if there was a move-out madness, like a day where it's just like on April the 29th, we will concentrate on moving out and moving everybody out cleanly and swiftly and with a minimum of looking like the parking lots around Chancellor's Way are, their own landfills. It makes you wonder.
Yeah. I think, you know what, you have really, really good, good ideas and perspectives. I think you should be involved in it this year. Or just even as an advisor, if you wanted. I think we could definitely use a lot more people to help organize something and just
right.
come together. Even if people just sit around and talk about it and plan it, and then other people can actually implement it.
Well, and your film points out that the tools are there, the personnel is in place. You have the food bank, you have the sustainability office, you have Restore. I don't know if sometimes it takes something like this to sort of give people that kick and to make them realize that there's a problem that they have the capacity to solve. But, is there a reason why you think that hasn't happened yet? Because...
Yeah, I have no idea, no honestly. Idea. Like, I don't really understand because, like you said, everything is there. All the organizations are there. Like, it's like, I don't know, it seems like it could be such a simple solution to implement it.
Did this come up at all? Like, when you're talking to, even off camera, that, they were like, you're kind of hitting on to something here, or, maybe we should be more proactive. Because it seems like the message from some of the people you talk to is like, yeah, just bring your stuff by. And if there's one thing that, we sort of see is in our daily lives, and not just with students, but getting a large group of people to act a single way is... even if it's in their best interest, is incredibly difficult.
Yeah, totally.
You need to sort of marshal them.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's definitely one of the challenges with that.
how long did it take you to... Let's get back to the movie making. Enough with the issue stuff. But the movie making, how long did it take you to pull all this together in terms of, like, the all the interviews, all the footage you did, and then all the work you did too, because it was also the story is also about you sort of reclamating all this.
Yeah, it was done over I think about a 3 to 4 month period, and including the editing, piecing it all together with the help of an editor, and then my videographer also.
Okay.
So we I can't remember how many days we filmed, but it was I'm thinking maybe like 10 or 15 days. We'd filmed and then pieced it all together, and so it was quite an ordeal, and kind of not knowing how it would actually turn out in the end. Or,
but this isn't your day job, so what do you do for a living? I mean,
right now I'm kind of in limbo, actually.
Oh,
I'm making some changes, but at the time I think it was in March I just started a new job, and so I was working. And then doing this at the same time,
right?
And
because that's always tricky, is with your side hustles,
for sure. Yeah,
but yeah,
I'd actually love to do something more like this. I just I loved it, and I loved the people that I got the chance to meet and work with, and I could see how it could really make a difference, right?
Do you mean documentaries or
documentary or some kind of a cause like this, or something environmental? Those are the things that I'm really, really passionate about.
I was going to ask you, in terms of taking on a filmmaking career, is that something you wanted to do, or is this just like the story that some people just have that story they have to tell, like To Kill a Mockingbird? It's just once you get that off your chest, it's you're good.
Well, I feel like there's more. I feel like there's more films.
Yeah.
I don't know when. I don't know what they would be exactly, but I'm hoping that one of them would be the sequel to this, a much shorter version about how it actually did change, or how it did create change, hopefully. And that's one of the things that we're actually organizing and working on right now. I think we've got about 40 or 50 people, you know, potentially who are interested in helping out, and we're just waiting to hear back from the property.
Okay.
So to find out what they say at their head office.
Well, what is that going to look like? You know, what kind of assistance are you trying to organize?
From us?
Yeah.
Okay, so how many? I think there's about between 5 and 10 organizations that are interested, community groups, mm-hmm. charities. Some of them are on campus.
Mm-hmm.
And we just basically want to get together and implement something to see how much we can actually recycle and divert and donate, and how much of a change we can make, you know, compared to the way it was last year.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully create a model that can actually be used in other cities, in anywhere in Canada or the US, because it's, from what I've heard, it's the same thing in any college or university town. It's the same dynamic, right? Huge volume of students in a short period of time with a lot of things that they're getting rid of, and nobody can really handle the volume, or nobody knows what to do with it.
Right, because I can imagine this would probably be a similar situation, if not worse, in, you know, the Ezra Street area of Waterloo, right, you know, right smack between Waterloo and Laurier. So, it, you know, a lot of students live there too, so you can only kind of imagine what's left behind there and what can be salvaged.
For sure. Maybe I'll drive by there this year.
That's a good follow-up.
Just out of curiosity.
You know, you've talked about your sort of experience dumpster diving. Was it, you know, was there anything about what the process you went through filming it, anything that surprised you, anything you learned that you didn't know before?
About the actual dumpster diving or the...
Or just, you know, sustainability, the environment, any of that.
You know what, actually, okay, so I did know about a lot of these organizations, but some of them I had no idea they even existed before, like the mm-hmm. sustainability office on campus.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea they even existed, and now, I mean, I'm in contact with them regularly, and they've been one of the biggest supporters of the film and of providing access to anything that we needed, and making some introductions, connections, and even mm-hmm. helping with what we're hoping to do next mm-hmm. for the move out.
Well, I think that is a relatively new sort of section of university life, but yeah, could definitely use the promotion. You said you were thinking about, or are you going to be retiring from dumpster diving? So why? It seems like you're just kind of picking up momentum, it's, you know.
why ruin a good thing, right?
Yeah.
yeah, I don't know. I just, I don't know. I feel like... I don't know, time to do something different. And, you know, how many blankets does somebody need, right?
Or well,
how many toasters?
Mm.
But you know what? Okay, there's a fascination that I have with that topic for some reason.
Mm.
Just because, so when the theme for the movie was modern day treasure hunting. I liken this to modern day treasure hunting, because it really is. Like, you can go into a dumpster somewhere and you really have no idea what you're going to find.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, sometimes, like, I've talked to people that pull out, I don't know, hundreds of dollars worth of things from dumpsters.
Yeah.
And I'm just shocked. Like, one guy was telling me about gold jewelry that he found. And I even found some jewelry and, like, and actual money and, like.
Well, video game stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, that was, there was a scene where, or a shot where you're opening the bags and there's like a Nintendo controller still in the box.
Yeah, it was marked at, I think, $19.99, the original price on it. Had never been taken out, and that was one of the surprises. So when I took the different things to the stores to sell at the end, I had no idea I'd get that much money for video games.
Yeah.
Because I don't play video games. And
yeah.
But apparently it's a lot of money.
A lot of money in video
and
games.
And it was like, it was easy money. I mean, I think I got like $30-something dollars.
Mm.
So,
it's incredible.
Yeah. You know what? There's a lot of people that, I mean, I think everybody's heard about dumpster diving, or most people have. And I think, you know, they're kind of curious about what it's like, you know, in some way. But I don't think they want to necessarily go through a dumpster, because it's got a bit of a stigma to it.
Well, so yeah.
Being able to watch it, you know, from your couch on a film is maybe a little bit of a better experience.
Right. And I think that, too, there's not an appreciation of what all gets thrown out sometimes, too. Just, you know, the... I mean, it was striking to me, and I do have some awareness of this, but, you know, even I was sort of taken aback by what all gets thrown out, and, you know, stuff that works, stuff that's useful, stuff that people would buy if you threw up an ad on the Canon or Kijiji or something and said, here, like, take my video game stuff.
Yeah.
Or, you know, my textbooks was another big one that, you know, you think there would be an appreciation for, because, and you said it's not just the money, it's the way you're lugging these things around. So it's striking just how disposable life can be sometimes.
Yeah, for sure. I think, and especially here in Canada or the US, mm-hmm. I feel like in other parts of the world, they have a different mentality, different attitude towards mm-hmm. that. And I think we're very fortunate to live where we do, and that, you know, that people can just, you know, throw things away, which, I mean, it says a lot, because in other countries, I don't know, they just can't economically and environmentally. I don't think they would.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're fortunate. We don't have any major conflicts here, no wars, no natural disasters.
Mm.
So I remember, you know, I've talked to people from different parts of the world, and I mean, they tell me, like, just they don't throw anything out there because they can't.
Yeah. You don't know what something's worth, and... Yeah, well, that's a downer to end it on, but yeah. You know what? You want to tell people where they can find the movie and download it and check it out?
Sure. It's on Vimeo. It's called Diverted, and it's a story about second chances and modern-day treasure hunting. And I'm really, really grateful for the help that I got from my videographer and my editing student who was helping, and all the people who actually, you know, gave me access to the film and to be part of this.
So. You know, you've been mentioning your crew. Mention them by name. Tell us your crew so they can get proper credit.
Okay, sure. okay, so Mac Hunter is mm-hmm. my videographer.
Okay.
And Julia Milodzic. So she was kind of a film student, and she was helping with the editing. And Leonard.
That was the crew?
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks to them, and thanks to you, Caleb, for coming by and talking about Diverted today. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
And once again, that was Caleb Jason, the director of Diverted, a story about modern-day treasure hunting and second chances, which you can watch right now on Vimeo. And before that, that was Catherine Hoffer and Matthew Geisbers of the University of Guelph Student Life. And you can find out more about Move Out Madness at studentlife.uoguelph.ca/moveout. And we're moving out with the Guelph Politicast for this week. My music for the Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics and Sid Dale. The host for the Guelph Politicast is Podbean. Go to guelphpoliticast.podbean.com to listen to past episodes, and while you're there, you can also listen to Open Sources Guelph. If you missed last Thursday's episode on CFRU, you can download it via the Politicast channel on Podbean. You can get in touch with me by email at animedonaldson@gmail.com. Reach me through Twitter at @AdamADonaldson. You can go to the Guelph Politico Facebook page at facebook.com/PoliticoGuelph. And of course, you can donate to Guelph Politico on Patreon at patreon.com/GuelphPolitico. If you like locally sourced independent media in the city of Guelph, please consider donating. And for all the latest local political news, check out guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca, where we'll have a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you shortly. Until then, see you next time.